It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 54 degrees under overcast skies. Pretty pleasant day altogether. Out at the airport, they have 83% humidity and east winds to 3 miles per hour, as well as 10 miles of visibility. Mostly cloudy skies for today, tonight, and tomorrow. A 50% chance of showers today. Northwest winds to 5 miles per hour, becoming completely calm later this afternoon. For tonight, a low around 49, west winds to 10 miles per hour. Chance of showers mainly before 10 p.m., then a slight chance of rain after 1 a.m. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain mainly between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m., then a chance of showers after that. Coming up on the Midday Report, the YK Delta region is celebrating Mary Peltola's election victory. She is the first Alaska Native person in Congress. And Katie Anastas rides along with an Anchorage school bus driver. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. President Biden welcomed the Labor Department's jobs report for August today, telling a White House audience that with 315,000 new jobs created last month, the economy remains on track. Analysts say a slight uptick in the jobless rate to 3.7% could be good news on the inflation front. The president says he's also hopeful.
The bottom line is jobs are up, wages are up, people are back to work. And we're seeing some signs that inflation may be, I'm not overpromising, may be beginning to ease.
The president today is announcing $1 billion in federal grants to support manufacturing, clean energy, farming, biotech, and other sectors. G7 finance ministers have agreed to implement a price cap on Russian oil aimed at reducing the Kremlin's main source of revenue for the war in Ukraine. As NPR's Jackie Northam reports, details such as the cost per barrel of crude are still to be worked out.
The U.S. and other G7 members hope to have the plan in place by early December. That's when a European Union embargo on Russian oil is set to take effect, as well as a ban on insuring and financing tankers carrying Russian oil. The Treasury Department, which has been pushing the price cap plan for months, says the move will help maintain global energy markets by keeping Russian oil flowing at lower prices. That, in turn, will help fight inflation. But some energy analysts doubt the plan will work because it'll be difficult to enforce. Russia has warned it will not sell oil products to countries taking part in the price cap. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Washington.
Emergency crews in California continue to battle two wildfires amid a punishing summer heat wave that's expected to last through Labor Day. From member station KCRW, Megan Jamerson reports containment of the Root Fire north of Los Angeles is steadily improving.
As crews worked to beat out the Root Fire Thursday, temperatures soared to 110 degrees, and firefighting activity was temporarily halted. Just the day before, seven firefighters were hospitalized with heat-related injuries. Federal workplace guidance says employees should not work in conditions at 108 degrees and above. This puts emergency crews in a conundrum as the West sees climate change increase the likelihood of extreme weather conditions happening at the same time, like drought, severe temperatures, and hotter and faster spreading wildfires. For NPR News, I'm Megan Jamerson in Los Angeles.
U.S. travel this final big weekend of summer is expected to be robust. The AAA reports that despite rising costs and flight disruptions, millions of Americans are expected to travel by car and plane over the three-day holiday weekend. The Dow closed down 337. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Many in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region are celebrating Mary Peltola's election victory to the U.S. House. Peltola is Yupik and is the first Alaskan Native person in Congress. Peltola is from the Kuskokwim area, and local leaders hope her election will bring Washington's resources to rural Alaska. KYUK's Nina Kravinsky has more.
Kwithlek Elder John W. Andrews saw the news of Peltola's win in his email on Wednesday night.
It gave me indescribable joy.
The 77-year-old is a member of the Organized Village of Kwithlek. The tribe, along with ONC and Bethel, endorsed Peltola's candidacy. Peltola's mother is from Kwithlek, and Peltola has lived both there and in Bethel. She received 93% of votes in Andrews Village.
Some years ago, some elder told me, our reach is the last of the sleeping giants. I think what that elder meant was we have our people in this region have a lot of potential.
Andrew saw that potential in Peltola. He said he texted her after hearing about the death of former U.S. Representative Don Young in March. Andrew wanted Peltola to run for the open seat.
I told her before that she can make it. That was her chance. And I was kind of just hoping it would become a reality. It finally happened.
Andrew has worked with Peltola on subsistence fishing committees and says he's seen her bring large, diverse groups of people together to address issues. He's happy to have someone who knows how much groceries and fuel cost in rural Alaska in Congress, and he hopes she'll continue to work on food security issues.
Coming from a small community, she has a lot of cultural values she practices by to share with all your relatives what is given to you from the wilderness.
Kevin Whitworth is the executive director of the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, a subsistence fishing group representing the river's 33 tribes. Whitworth stepped into the role after Peltola stepped down to campaign for Congress. She labeled herself pro-fish and made protecting subsistence fishing access a major campaign plank. Whitworth hopes Peltola will maintain that focus and place limits on bycatch in the federal trawling industry, as her campaign said she would seek to do.
It's just inspirational. You know, somebody from a rural community who grew up in a small village now has a position in Washington, D.C., a very powerful position.
In addition to subsistence fishing, Bethel Mayor Mark Springer hopes Peltola will advocate for a list of issues that he sees improving life in rural Alaska, including expanding broadband in the region, ramping up climate research on the subarctic, strengthening the area's National Guard presence, and improving aviation safety.
I couldn't be more pleased with the outcome and more pleased with having her as our new United States representative.
In an email, Association of Village Council President CEO Vivian Corthius called Peltola's victory, quote, a giant win for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. She says that it sets, quote, a great example for our youth on what is achievable. Tom Leonard, a vice president at Chilista Corporation, hopes Peltola will advocate for tribal infrastructure funding for water treatment and broadband expansion. He hopes her being from the area means issues like that will be top of mind for Peltola when she's in Washington.
Just the knowledge of knowing that we have a representative who knows how we feel, who knows how we think. You know, I have so many incredible memories growing up in Bethel, being out on the river, getting fish, berries, everything like that. And she knows all of those different things, all of those aspects.
Peltola will hold the congressional seat for 4 months and is on the November ballot to serve the next full 2-year term. In Bethel, I'm Nina Kravinsky.
School bus drivers are an essential part of a student's day. They deal with busy roads and distracted drivers, all with dozens of kids in tow. Districts around the state are trying to figure out what it takes to attract more drivers amid a nationwide shortage. To get an inside look, Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas rode along with an Anchorage school bus driver and has this story.
Every weekday morning around 6:30 a.m., Michael Herzog inspects a school bus at the Anchorage School District's transportation depot. He checks the lights and the tread on the tires. Then he gets into the driver's seat to test the brakes.
This is just making sure that if an emergency happened, we lost brake pressure, that our brakes would turn on.
Herzog is one of more than 150 drivers on staff in the Anchorage School District, which is facing an ongoing driver shortage. Herzog applied after retiring from a retail job. He has three kids who all went through the district, and he says he's a big believer in public education.
I felt like I wanted to give something back to the community that was part of it. I felt like I wasn't quite ready to completely exit the work thing and the schedule of that. I knew I wanted to do something with kids.
Herzog started driving in winter 2021 when Anchorage students went back to school in person for the first time since the pandemic started. On this Tuesday morning, Herzog is taking dozens of kids from East Anchorage to high school, middle school, and elementary school. He greets every kid who walks onto the bus. Sometimes that comes with a safety reminder.
Do me a favor, wait till the reds come out before you cross, because that car may or may not have stopped. Thanks. Yeah. Hi. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
He says the number of good mornings and hellos he gets back increases as the year goes on. That's one downside of the cohort system in place this fall, which gives every route 3 weeks of service and six without.
It takes just 3 weeks for them to get used to you, 3 or 4 weeks, so it's kind of a shame that that three-week break. It's kind of like right at that moment when the kids start feeling relaxed on the bus, they get to know you.
Herzog says this job isn't for everybody. You have to like kids and be patient with other drivers. You also have to be willing to work a split shift, a few hours for morning pickup and a few in the afternoon for drop-off. Herzog usually works around 30 hours a week. The district pays about $21 per hour. Herzog says one big incentive for him is access to health benefits. But he says some bus drivers say they can't make a living without a summer driving job.
When I first came on board, some people did say that their summer job allowed them to be the school bus driver.
A lot of those summer jobs are in the tourism industry. The district expects 17 drivers to return from summer jobs in mid-September. Yvette Edwards is a transportation supervisor for the district. She's also worked as a bus attendant and a driver.
A lot of our drivers stayed with the tourist company because they're making good tips, and people movers just as short, so they're pulling from bus drivers as well.
People Mover, the city's bus program, pays up to $29 hourly. One tour company, Alaska Cruise Transportation, lists pay at up to $27 an hour plus tips. Edwards says wages play a huge part in the driver shortage. And if the district wants to attract and retain drivers, she says, they should pay more. The district has been offering signing bonuses, paid training opportunities, and help getting new drivers their commercial driver's licenses. But according to Edwards, that's not why most applicants say they're applying.
There's a lot of outpour from the community. It's very touching because they're like, you know, I've heard the need and I just feel like I want to do my part. And I see you guys need people. And there's a lot of people that's why they're here.
Herzog has heard that from new drivers, too. New drivers ride along with him when they're getting familiar with the job. And he says a few of them have been parents in the district.
Three of them were just have kids in school, and they were like, I should help out.
Herzog's last stop for the morning is at Nunaka Valley Elementary School. Students thank him and say goodbye on their way out.
That should be everyone.
He'll be back later this afternoon, ready to greet each one of them with a smile. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Two of Alaska's best writers will be honored this weekend in Washington, D.C., as part of the Library of Congress National Book Festival. The annual event celebrates the nation's best-selling authors, poets, and illustrators. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Alaska's contribution to this year's National Book Festival includes Seth Kantner's tribute to the land and its abundant wildlife that's threatened by climate change, and Cindy Lou Alaud's children's book about school kids who don't let cold weather stop them from getting out on the playground.
Recess at 20 Below is such a unique story.
Sarah Judé is co-president of the Alaska Center for the Book, which chose the two titles for the national event. She says ALOD's storytelling and photography about Alaskan kids playing outside during winter gives students elsewhere a glimpse of life in the far north.
I think it really showcases what's different about the state, you know, and gives people the wonderful slice of life that not everybody gets to experience.
Judé says that sense of place also stands out in Kantner's work titled A Thousand Trails Home, Living with Caribou. She says his firsthand account of life in the wilds of northwest Alaska is made even more compelling by his commentary on the need to protect the land and its wildlife from the twin threats of resource development and a warming climate.
The timeliness of the subject, the connection to climate change, the attention to the changing lifestyle, it captures a lot.
I'm pleased that somebody noticed my caribou book, because I feel like my message about caring about the land and being tied to the land is an important one.
Kantner's a commercial fisherman who splits his time between Kotzebue and his home on the Kobuk River. He grew up there hunting and fishing to subsist, and he says that lifestyle has informed his writing ever since he wrote his first book, titled Ordinary Wolves, published in 2004. He's written four others since then and is now working on what he calls a tragicomedy about the place he calls home.
I would like to write a fictional tale about Northwest Arctic. There's a lot of change here and craziness because of the crazy amount of change.
ALOD, the children's book author, also drew from her own experience as a school teacher when she wrote Recess at 20 Below, and she's now advising kids to do the same so they can write about their thoughts and life experiences.
I just hope to encourage young people to write their stories. Get those stories written down because they're important.
ALOD is a longtime educator who lives in Delta Junction. She retired from teaching 15 years ago, but returned to the job a couple years later, so she now serves as a reading interventionist for the school district.
To help kids who were struggling with reading, especially after the pandemic.
ALOD also writes about education. Her work includes collaborating on a book for vision-impaired children titled Everybody Plays, How Kids with Visual Impairment Play Sports.
We wrote the story together, and I took the photographs, and I donated it to the American Publishing House for the Blind.
ALOD says she's got more projects in mind, along with traveling and keeping up with her grandkids. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Eye disorders may have influenced the work of famous painters. There is a long history of scientists and clinicians arguing particular artists were affected by vision disorders based on signs in their works. Some argued the leaders of the Impressionist movement were short-sighted, and that may explain their broad, impetuous style. So, is a particular style the result of impoverished vision, or rather a conscious artistic choice made by the artist? Here are three artists who, it's been claimed, suffered vision impairments. El Greco, painter of the Spanish Renaissance, was said to have had an astigmatism which mainly causes blurry vision rather than a change in image size. Plus, other evidence suggests El Greco's use of vertical elongation was a deliberate artistic choice. Claude Monet was diagnosed with cataracts in 1912 and recommended to undergo surgery. He refused at first. One of Monet's fears was that surgery would alter his color perception, and indeed, after surgery, he complained of the world appearing too yellow or too blue. It was 2 years before he felt his color vision had returned to normal. Experimental work has confirmed color perception is measurably altered for months after cataract surgery, as the eye and brain adapt to the increased blue light previously blocked by the cataract. Clifton Pugh. His abnormal color vision is well documented, but an analysis of the colors used in Pugh's paintings failed to reveal any signatures that would suggest a color vision deficiency. This is consistent with previous work, demonstrating it was not possible to reliably diagnose a color vision deficiency based on an artist's work. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the second day of September, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:12. It will set again at 9:04. That will give us 13 hours and 51 minutes of glorious daylight. Our record high for this date was 76 degrees, that was set in 1942, and our record low is 37, set in 1988. Currently 57 degrees up here on Signal Hill, they are only showing 54 degrees in the valley out at the airport. Up to 55 degrees, they have east winds to 3 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility, and 80% humidity. They're calling for mostly cloudy skies for this afternoon, mostly cloudy tonight, mostly cloudy tomorrow, too. 50% chance of showers for the rest of the day today, and a high near 57 called for, northwest winds to 5, becoming completely calm this afternoon. For tonight, a chance of showers before 10, then a chance of rain after 1 a.m., low around 49 overnight, westerly winds to 10. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m., then a chance of showers after that. Mostly cloudy skies with a high near 58 tomorrow. Westerly winds continuing at 5, and then becoming completely calm tomorrow morning. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide that just happened here on the east side. That happened at 12:06, just about 15 minutes ago. That was a 2.1-foot tide. Our next tide will be a high tide at 6:31 p.m. of 8.7 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up in just about 15 minutes at 12:36 p.m. That will be a 3-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a high tide at 7 p.m. of 13.6 feet. Well, let's check in the brand new Alaska Fish and Game announcement.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 35, date issued 10 a.m. on September 2nd. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Saturday, September 3rd, until 6 p.m. Monday, September 5th in the following areas, in the halibut and sturgeon sections of the Southwest Kodiak District. As previously announced, there will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Saturday, September 3rd, until 6 p.m. Monday, September 5th in the following areas, in the Eastside Kodiak District, except for the inner UGAC and outer UGAC Bay sections remain closed, the outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Cape Igvac, Wide Bay, Alinchak Bay, Katmai, and Dakavak Bay sections of the mainland district. The following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 6 p.m. Monday, September 5th. The outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the central and north cape sections of the northwest Kodiak District, and the southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. Closed waters are expanded until 6 p.m. Monday, September 5th at Molina Creek to consist of all waters within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 251-105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Fishermen are reminded that until further notice in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse hangar in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record phone at 486-45. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Variable 10 today, seas to 4 feet. West 15 tonight, seas to 5 feet. And southwest 15 tomorrow, seas to 7 feet. over in the Shelikov Strait. Variable 10 becoming north 15 this afternoon, seas building to 3 feet this afternoon. For tonight, variable 10 becoming west 20 after midnight, seas building to 5 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, on our west side, west 20, seas to 4 feet. There will be a celebration of life for Margaret Lucine Roberts tomorrow at 3 p.m. at the Afognak Native Corporation building on Near Island. The family invites all who knew and loved Margaret to come, share a story, and leave your favorite memory in her honor. If you'd like to bring a dish to share, please deliver it to Susan Malutin at the Afognak building between 1 and 2 p.m. Thank you. Tomorrow and Sunday, it is the Kodiak Rodeo and State Fair at the Kodiak Fairgrounds. The Kodiak Rodeo is starting on Saturday. Includes bull riding, junior bull riding, barrel racing, team roping, shoot dogging, ribbon roping, breakaway roping, pole bending, goat tying, and the rescue race, and even more. The Kodiak State Fair, if you can make it, build it, grow it, or harvest it, you can enter it at the Kodiak State Fair. They're calling artists, photographers, 4-H'ers, students, craftsmen, bakers, gardeners, quilters, and whoever would like to participate in the 2022 Kodiak State Fair and share your talent with the community. To submit your entries, just go to the exhibit hall out at the fairgrounds Thursday between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. That was yesterday, I guess. So today between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m., and the judging starts today. Also happening on Saturday, the Kodiak 4-H Livestock Auction, and that's happening Saturday at the fairgrounds. Bidder registration begins at 11 a.m., and the auction begins promptly at noon. It's a chance to support Kodiak youth and fill your freezer with locally sourced quality pork. The winning bidder is purchasing a live animal, and payment is expected to be made at the auction. They can accept cash, check, or credit card. The Board of Education work session that was scheduled for Monday, September 12th, has been rescheduled for next Tuesday, September 6th, at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is room number F140 of the old high school wing. The Fairwind Players is looking for a few imaginative theater directors to direct some short plays and skits in their early November production. If you're new to directing, have some experience, but don't want to take on a full play, this is your chance. Contact Mike Wall at gm@kmxt.org by September 6th to find out more or sign up. The Pillar Creek Salmon Hatchery here in Kodiak is looking for volunteers for their remote egg takes in September. There will be one egg take per week from September 7th through September 27th. They need 3 or 4 volunteers per egg take. It's an all-day volunteer opportunity to take part in a remote sockeye salmon egg take at Saltery Lake for the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association and the Pillar Creek Hatchery. Float plane flight, lunches, and drinks are provided to volunteers to take part in the egg take. The workday lasts from 7:30 a.m. until late afternoon, depending on the success of the operations. Volunteers can be provided waiters and boots if needed. Contact Al Seal at 907-486-4730 to find out more information.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the September 2nd edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Someone asked me not too long ago what my favorite month of the year is here on Kodiak. After some thought, I said September. September is the month when the bears are full and beautiful after chowing down on salmon for several weeks. And we humans get a chance to catch some silvers, one of my favorite salmon to sport fish. They're just fun to catch and good eating, too. Add to that the gradual change of color from our incredible green landscapes of summer to the gold and red hues of autumn. the colorful sunrises and sunsets, and the return of the night sky, where one can sit in a clearing and contemplate the vastness of the universe. That pretty much describes my happy place. Some years, these things start happening in late August. Sometimes summer hangs on through almost all of September. But averaged out over my 33 years here in Kodiak, September is my favorite month. Here's hoping you enjoy the month ahead. The Kodiak Rodeo and State Fair kick off the autumn season this weekend. Drop off exhibit items for the fair on Friday until 6 p.m. Then on Saturday and Sunday, head on out to see the exhibits, participate in the 4-H livestock auction, eat some fair food, and get ready for the rodeo. There's a little something for everyone at the fair. Gates at the fair open at noon on Saturday and Sunday. The rodeo starts at 3 p.m. on Saturday and 2 p.m. on Sunday. Rain or shine, the whole family is bound to have a good time at the rodeo and fair. When you head out to the fairgrounds, keep your eyes open for emperor geese along the shore of Women's Bay. A few of those overwintering beauties have arrived already. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.